Nan Heyworth, as I said to you the other day, I saw a picture of you, and I don't want to be sexist about it, but you're a very attractive woman. Now, being in the Congress, which has a reputation for blatant sexism and men hitting on women and all the rest of it, how do you handle that?
Well, I haven't encountered it.
Really?
Ellen, truthfully, not. And I certainly work very happily with my colleagues, regardless of their gender. And I have really been very kindly received throughout our district and in the House in ways that don't make me uncomfortable at all. So I'm happy to be able to say that. People are focused certainly on the work that we need to do. And on the personal level, there's much congeniality across the aisle, as well as on my own side of the aisle, which is welcome. But no trouble in that regard, I'm happy to say.
Well, I'm delighted. Let me ask you to begin with, you saw the Republican convention, yes?
I was not actually at the convention. I did watch it with interest during the evenings. But you know, Ellen, I work on the ground in our district, and that's where I felt I should be, and I'm glad I was.
So let me ask you this: Governor Romney got a bounce afterwards, but apparently President Obama has gotten a bigger one. Do you think that there was anything at the convention that was not done correctly? One thing that I'm thinking of is that George W. Bush, I heard one of his supporters, obviously Morning Joe, the other day, yelling about how they basically he had been dissed by not being invited as a former president as Bill Clinton was. What do you think?
Well, the sense I've had, although I do not know President Bush personally, so this is strictly my interpretation, but the sense I've had is that he actually has his preference has been to stay on the private side of life and allow the party to give the spotlight to the people who are in the process and this world of political debate and campaigning today. So I don't think President Bush was disinvited, but I do get the sense that he actively chooses to let others have the stage.
What about Paul Ryan? I know you know him. We've spoken about it before.
Yes.
If there's a lightning rod, I think, in New York State, among many of the Democrats and the independents, it is Paul Ryan. And I'm wondering, you know, what you can tell us about him.
Well, I do know Paul Ryan personally. I like and admire him. He is a friend. He is truly his goal, and what drives him is that he wants to solve the enormous problem that faces us. And I agree with him, as do many others. We face potential catastrophe if we don't restructure and reproportion the relationship between the federal government and our economy. And that's really what it comes down to. And he does, with all sincerity, I know because I've sat next to him on many occasions, or certainly around the same table with him as he talks about these issues. He is a leader, in some ways, as you know, he's been the only voice to bring forth a plan that actually addresses the issue of the federal role in our economy and how we fulfill the commitments we've made without incurring further enormous debt. You know, how do we do those things? He has actually had the courage to bring forth a plan with specifics, and it's easy to talk about these things, as painful as they are. Talking about them is one thing that most of us do, but actually to come forward with a plan that says, look, I'm proposing that we do these things and not do these things, it takes courage and it takes foresight. And he has both of those things, both of those traits.
Do you think it was a good choice in terms of winning the election?
I do, because this election, it does present us with a stark choice between two philosophies of government. Our goals are the same. Democrats and Republicans alike want to see every American have a future in which he or she can fulfill the dreams they have that are unique in all of history as Americans, to fulfill those dreams in a country that is thriving and in an economy that is sustainable for the long run. But how do you get there? And I agree with Paul Ryan that you get there by understanding that the federal government, there is a natural limit on what citizens are able to render to the government to do its work, and that limit is about 20% of gross domestic product. Right now, the federal government spends about 25% of gross domestic product, and that in and of itself can't be sustained, and we're accumulating trillions of dollars worth of debt. And when interest rates increase, as they almost assuredly will, we are going to be faced with a terrible burden paying for that debt. So that's the challenge. Okay, if we know we have to reduce what the federal government is taking from us, how do we do that in a rational way?
Is it irrational? Is
compromising what the government needs to do?
Is it irrational, Nan Hayworth, to demand that, as we have in this arrangement we have going forward, that defense gives up a good deal too?
It is rational to have the defense budget reflect our priorities in a way that we can afford to sustain as a nation. I don't personally set a percentage of GDP as a goal for defense spending. Some people do, as you know. The American Enterprise Institute does, among others, and I admire their work in many ways. But certain scholars there say, well, we should spend a minimum of 4% of GDP on defense. I don't feel that we have to set that kind of a target level, and I do think that there are ways in which we can reduce spending in defense without compromising our effectiveness.
Well, we only have 2 minutes, but I want to go very fast. It seems to me that Republicans quite frequently, demographically, I think this can be proven, do a little bit better in terms of income than Democrats do. So that when you say that we're spending too much to help people in terms of the social net, aren't you in fact showing a certain amount of prejudice on the part of the average Republican?
No, not at all. Alan, the idea is that every American will have the opportunity to have the dignity of work and be able to use the fruits of what they earn according to their own priorities, that we respect those priorities within their lives among men and women of conscience. And right now we have a situation in which people who work and pay taxes at whatever income level are suffering, particularly, yes, in the middle class. There's no question about it, and that's certainly, you know, that's where my life has been, I understand that people, especially men and women in small business who have so-called S corporations, are being heavily penalized for the burdens of government, because they, although on paper it may look as though they have a higher income bracket, in fact, what they're doing with that income, if you will, is growing their small business.
And Nan, we have to stop right there. We'll see you soon.
You bet.